This is the Daily Knight for Wednesday, May 4, 2016. The Daily Knight supports Making Biscuits Cat Rescue, a 501c3 charity. If you like this podcast, please consider making a donation or adopting a rescue cat at makingbiscuits.org. I'm your host, Gerardo San Diego, and today I'm going to talk about this week's Game of Thrones episode entitled Home. It's season 6, episode 2, titled Home. And today is Star Wars Day, May 4th. So I'm going to talk about Star Wars and kind of freestyle it. Talk about if you didn't hear my podcast from way back from December of last year, I kind of talked about how I came to love Star Wars since I was a little kid. So I'm just going to, I sort of didn't have enough time to really, really, really talk about it enough back then. So I'm just going to kind of freestyle it, probably about 20, 25 minutes on Game of Thrones and about another 20, 25 minutes for Star Wars. So here we go. Hopefully you've seen the latest Game of Thrones episode called Home. And spoiler alert, hopefully, what is it today? It's Wednesday, so it was out on Sunday, so hopefully you have had enough time to see it, because, the internet is basically spoiling the hell out of it right now. The most important parts of that Game of Thrones is basically out on the internet, and you can't really, avoid it anymore, so... here we go. I'm gonna go through scene by scene pretty quickly, and then I'll talk about what my other thoughts regarding the scene, how it relates to the other parts of Game of Thrones. I didn't read the books, and from what I've heard, I talked to somebody who did read the books, and they basically gave up on the TV show because they said that after season one or two, the TV show is so different from the book that they just stopped watching the TV show. And they liked the books better than the TV show. So I wouldn't know, since I've never read the book, so... That's my point of view, in case you're wondering. I don't know anything about the books. I have been reading online wikis on who Jon Snow is. And this latest episode is like, there's a scene in there that made me go, Just like that. Right in the middle of watching HBO, I went, So there, okay. So the very first scene is Bran at the tree. And Bran is a big boy. What the heck happened? His voice changed. He got taller. He stretched out. Wait a minute. Was he wearing the same clothes that he started off on this journey? Or did they patch him up? Like, you know, they went to the... right next to the blacksmith is the alterations dude in Westeros. And they got him, you know, extensions on his clothes. Or did he just... kind of, you know, take it from a taller person along the way. Hodor. So, makes you think, makes you think again. So, Bran is in the tree, and he's warging out, and Max von Sydow was there, which is kind of cool, because, hey, you know what? This ties into the whole Star Wars thing, huh? Max von Sydow, Lor San Tekka, and Game of Thrones. So he's talking to, I guess, the Max von Sydow is the three-eyed raven, the tree. My cat is in the background kind of like wanting my attention. So, okay, hopefully she doesn't tear up the joint. Okay, so Bran is talking to the three-eyed raven, the Max von Sydow, and they do a flashback. Von Sydow basically takes Bran back to the past when Ned Stark was a little boy, even younger than Bran is now. And he looks like he's not the best fighter in the world, and his older brother is teaching him how to fight. But the really cool part about that scene, well, two really cool parts, is Lyanna came over. She comes in on her horse, and she's all happy and full of life, and so is Winterfell. I mean, pretty much all we've seen of Winterfell since almost the beginning of the show is just depressing, desperation, dark, death, DD, all the D's. But Winterfell looks like, you know, it looks like the spring harvest. They're, everything's got a sepia tone on it, and they're harvesting the wheat, and everything is fine and happy. And Bran, his teleported self, is saying that. It's like, look how happy Winterfell is. And so Lyanna Targaryen. She comes in on her horse and And Lyanna talks to somebody else, and guess who? It's Hodor. But it's not Hodor. It is, his real name is Willis. I had to look this up. I thought it was Willits or Will or something. And it's Willis, W-I-L-L-I-S. No, W-Y-L-L-I-S. And I heard in a previous show, his mom called him Walder, not Willis. So, wait a minute. Does that mean... So, hopefully, this flashback scene is telling the truth. It's not like a delusional fantasy thing. And this is what really happened in history. Which means that Hodor's real name is Willis. Cool. Okay, so you got Lyanna Targaryen, which is Bran Stark's aunt. And Willis, who ultimately becomes Hodor. And I keep thinking there's a connection there. I wonder, you know, we know Hodor now as he doesn't say anything else except Hodor, right? But in that flashback scene, Willis was talking like a normal kid. So, you know, what bad things happened or what things happened to Willis that made him... is catatonic the word? You know, just kind of messed up with his mind that all he says is Hodor now. Does Lyanna have anything to do with it? That makes it kind of interesting, right? Oh, by the way, a little bit of a tangent. There's some rumors that they want to make a Game of Thrones movie, actual movie in the theaters movie. And they're thinking about doing it like 1,000 years before what the series that we're watching now. So it's officially a prequel to the TV series Game of Thrones. So that would be kind of interesting also. We get to learn about how the wall was constructed, maybe how the North was before Castle Black was there and the Night's Watch. So, all right. So, next scene is, let's see, Willis. I was asking myself when I was watching this first scene is, why are they showing us this flashback? I was trying to figure out, like, what's the connection? Why is there's always a connection somewhere, right? So, so the next scene is the usurpers are about to break into the room where the dead body of Jon Snow is being held, and what's his name? Ser Davos is there, and they're getting ready to fight whoever comes through the door, and they know that they're going to die because there are way too many men outside. And right when the door breaks open, their own door breaks open, you hear a crash at the front gate, the main front gate of Castle Black, and here come the wildlings with their giant. And all of a sudden, Castle Black is back in control of Ser Davos and the good guys, the, you know, quote unquote good guys. And I love the way things are tied in. Almost the scenes are tied to each other because the giant gets shot by one of the archers of the bad guys in Castle Black. So, of course, the giant just shrugs it off and slams the little archer into the wall, just, you know, just a smear on the wall. And so, you know, that is that. And then they take the bad guys into the dungeons, into the prison of Castle Black, and that the scene pretty much ends there. Ollie's still alive. Little punk Ollie. He tried to swing a sword, ain't gonna do it. So now this scene of the giants, the giant, you know, swings the man into the wall and basically pulverizes him. Now you switch to back to King's Landing, where some idiot drunk is bragging about how he exposed himself to Cersei while she was doing the Walk of Shame. And of course, this drunk is talking loud so everybody could hear him. So when he goes into behind the building to take a leak, Cersei's giant is there. And we assume it's the Mountain, right? It's the Frankenstein monster version of the Mountain, because the Mountain officially died, and apothecary. Ooh, I wanted to say that word for a long time. The apothecary, scientist guy, kind of Frankenstein the Mountain back into life, and so the Mountain guard of Cersei sneaks up behind the drunk exposing guy and slams his head into the wall, big old smear on the wall also, just like the scene before when the giant smears the archer into the wall. So, and that was pretty much it. Oh, okay. And then Cersei wants to see the body of Myrcella, her daughter, which is in the temple, but she is confined to the Red Keep, basically her own chambers. And there was almost a fight, but the Cersei figures, okay, I'm just gonna chill out for now, let my son Tommen, who is officially the king, figure things out. And he's gonna, this is Cersei talking, I'm not going to stay here forever. You can't keep a good Cersei down. That was there's a whole bunch of scenes in this episode, just like the last episode. Not as many, I think, as the last episode, but the story just kept going. And I know it's going to be like little pieces. And we're supposed to remember these little pieces as we're watching it. And then we get to connect the pieces as the season unfolds, and you know things are going to make more sense later on. So let me see. The mountain slams the pissing drunk guy into the wall, and now we switch. Of course, Cersei is hoping her son Tommen is going to fix things. So we switch to Tommen and Jaime watching over Marcella's body, and Tommen is doing his emo little kid who shouldn't be king speech to Jaime, and he doesn't know what to do. And Jaime says, go talk to your mother, you gotta go apologize to your mom. So Tommen goes and, you know, leaves the temple. So of course, who comes up? This dude, this High Sparrow guy, he just kind of shows up any damn place he wishes. Have you noticed that? It's like the guy is wearing a piece of cloth. Is he? I think he has sandals on, but that's pretty much it. He doesn't even comb his hair. I don't think he even washes. I don't know. At night, whenever he's about to fall asleep, I think he just collapses on the ground and, you know, passes out. And then in the morning, wakes up. But you know what? Okay, yeah, sure. He has nothing, but he has all these freaking guards to follow him around and beat people up who disagree with him, which, you know, like, yeah, okay, that's hypocrite. So High Sparrow comes in, and talks to Jamie, and pretty much Jamie wants to do bad things to the High Sparrow, but here comes the High Sparrow's backup guys, and Jamie doesn't do anything. So I think it's going to be another confrontation. This High Sparrow guy is pretty much pissing off a whole bunch of Lannisters. Oh, man. This could be a lead-up to something really bad and slow happening to the High Sparrow. Okay, here's a prediction. The Mountain Frankenstein monster is going to have his way with the High Sparrow once everything is said and done. And Cersei's going to be there to smile. The way she smiles. Creepy. Something also that I've noticed. Okay, you realize the High Sparrow, there's the religious philosophy of the High Sparrow people. And then there's the religious philosophy of the Many-Faced Gods group. And I keep thinking, is this on purpose or is it just coincidence? For some reason, I keep identifying the High Sparrow as more a Christianity thing and the Many-Faced Gods as a Buddhism thing. Let me expand on that. I can talk about it now. I'm going to talk about Arya's scene later on. But Christianity is more about penitence and being sorry for what you did and being forgiven and penance, being punished for what you did. Whereas the Many-Faced Gods, the High Sparrow religion is sort of like Christianity, Catholicism, okay? The Many-Faced Gods is more about getting rid of your ego, being unselfish and letting go of yourself and not being a specific person, right? You know, a girl has no name thing, right? So it's the obliteration of the self, as they say in Buddhism. You obliterate yourself, you obliterate your ego, you get rid of your ego so that there's nothing left of you, and you don't have any of this personal, mental, psychological baggage, and then you can finally view the world as it is, with as much truth as you're sensing the world. So I keep thinking the Many-Faced Gods group are more like Buddhism in terms of their philosophy. So I think that's a cool parallel. Now, will the High Sparrow and the Many-Faced Gods people face each other one of these days? Or will they influence, will the Many-Faced Gods influence Arya and she brings that philosophy back to Winterfell or wherever she's going to wind up? And will the High Sparrow, so far it doesn't look like a High Sparrow is going to influence anybody. He's not really changing anybody. He's just kind of pissing people off. It's, you know what? It's not really Christianity. That's not how, from what I've read, that's not how Jesus Christ would have done that. So, but I'm no expert. I just read this stuff. So it's kind of a cool thing. You know, there's this huge focus on the High Sparrow group as being the quote-unquote religious group. But when you think about it, the Many-Faced Gods, they're almost mystical, but they are also so sort of a religious or a spiritual group. So that just kind of dawned on me in the last episode. So let me see. So philosophies. Yeah, okay. So that is the scene with the High Sparrow. Now we come to Tyrion. Tyrion the boss. And it unanimously, Tyrion is the hero of this whole thing called Game of Thrones. And pretty much whenever you see Tyrion, something notable at the very least is going to happen. And it just seems like Tyrion, no matter what he does, he can just go walk down the stairs or, you know, drink some wine or scribble something on a piece of paper. When Peter Dinklage opens his mouth, all of a sudden it's a memorable scene. It just seems like it. So I wrote down, I think, it just in that one little scene with Tyrion drinking with, what's his name? His traveling buddy. There's like, how many quotes here I have written down? Like three or four? Here's the first one. If you've seen the episode, of course, you remember these quotes. If I lost my cock, I'd be drinking all the time. That's Tyrion. Number two, you make dwarf jokes, I make eunuch jokes. And number three, when Tyrion is talking to the dragon, I'm here to help, don't eat the help. See, is there any more quotes? I'm reading. No, okay, so. Of course, so Tyrion, this is Tyrion's version of, you know, a Saturday night. he goes drinking with his eunuch friends, insults everybody, and then he decides he's going to unchain the dragons. You know, he's like, okay, let's go. Walks into the catacombs where the dragons are, the two dragons, and basically talks to them half drunk, and unchains both of them. And I love the way he did it to the first dragon, takes the collar off, and once he did that, the second one, just like a dog or a cat, you know, sees what Tyrion just did, and the dragon, the second dragon, offers its neck to Tyrion, you know, to so he can eat more easily reach the bolt that is, keeping the chain together. And I didn't know what the heck was going on. I thought, you know, Tyrion is dead. He's going to get eaten. He's going to get roasted. And if somebody told you that scene happened and described to you that scene, you would never believe that person. But the way Peter Dinklage and the showrunners of the show and the director and the cinematographer, the way they captured that scene, I absolutely believe it. Pretty much these dragons, and you also get a setup to it, because he was talking to Natalie Emmanuel. I don't know her actual name on the show, but the actress Natalie Emmanuel, when they were drinking, and he said, have the dragons ever attacked you? And she says, no, they can sense who to trust. And I think that sort of gave him a little bit more of an impetus. I don't think it gave him any courage, but I think it gave him more of a, not confidence. Yeah, impetus is the best word. Like, he can do it. He's got maybe like a 10% chance of surviving. And so, of course, Tyrion, like, I want to draw a meme or create a meme that just says, you know, Tyrion, boss. So, yay, Tyrion. Here's a little tangent. Peter Dinklage, if you like his acting and you haven't seen any of his other movies, I recommend it's called The Station Agent. And if you don't like being bored, this movie will probably kind of bore you, because it's just a whole bunch of people talking and they have problems and they're trying to help each other with each other's problems. So The Station Agent with Peter Dinklage, go check it out. Amazing. Great acting. It feels sort of like a little bit of Sling Blade without all the violence of Sling Blade. So, and what was I thinking about? Oh, and the person, the director of The Station Agent, Peter Dinklage's movie, is Tom McCarthy. If that name sounds familiar to you, Tom McCarthy directed what is that called? Spotlight, which won this year's Academy Awards for Best Movie. So these people know what they're doing. If you watch The Station Agent, directed by Tom McCarthy, who also years later directed Spotlight. So it's quality stuff. All right, back to Game of Thrones. The next scene is Arya, a girl has no name scene. It was kind of a short scene, and I think they just put it there so that it shows you how much time has passed, where she's hungry, she's tired, she's hurt, and the many-faced gods leader guy tells her all she has to do is say her name, and he will give her food and a place to sleep and get her cleaned up, and she still refuses. It's kind of like brainwashing, isn't it? So basically, I guess the brainwashing worked, or Arya knows the game. She's playing the game, right? So of course she says, a girl has no name, a girl has no name, a girl has no name. And to convince the guy, says, okay, you've passed the test. Let's get you back, get you cleaned up, and let's get you back to, you know, where you were before. So you probably get her eyesight back in the next episode, or, you know, next one or two episodes. So that's pretty cool. Okay, you figure she's going to get there anyway. It was just, all right, it's exposition. And then the next scene is, of course, good old Ramsay. I can't believe that every episode that they have Ramsay do something hideous, and it's always worse than his last hideous act, that we haven't yet said, you know what, okay, that's enough for me. Now Ramsay Bolton is becoming a caricature. I guess it's a testament to the actor who's portraying Ramsay Bolton that it still hasn't reached the caricature part. It's methodical, the way he killed Roose Bolton and his Roose Bolton's wife and newborn son. Roose Bolton is the king right now, and if he dies, then the heir would have been Ramsay Bolton, but his wife just had a baby. And since the baby is officially Roose Bolton's blood, then Ramsay Bolton, who is adopted, does not get to become king. So how does Ramsay deal with that? He kills his adopted father, and then he kills his adopted mother and his newborn stepbrother. So done. All of a sudden, you know, Ramsay is now again the king of whatever kingdoms he's a king of. Right now, they're in Winterfell. It's one of those shocking scenes, and you can see it coming. The thing is, when Ramsay Bolton is about to do something hideous and just, I don't know the word for it. You don't, at least I don't even think that he would ever not do the bad thing that he's about to do. He always goes through with his bad thing. So, and we're just waiting for him to just get his comeuppance, his due. Just karma's going to get Ramsay Bolton one of these days. Wonder who's going to do it to Ramsay when that moment comes. Is it going to be Arya? Is it going to be Sansa? Is it going to be Tyrion? Or is it going to be somebody that we totally didn't expect? That actor is amazing. Ramsay Bolton. Then, of course, when you get Ramsay and you have, what's his name? Theon Greyjoy. What did he nicknamed him? Reek. Yeah. Reek. Come here, Reek. Theon Greyjoy is now saying goodbye to Sansa after Brienne and Podrick rescued them from Ramsay Bolton's men out in the Winter Woods. So Theon Greyjoy, basically, he says, you know, he can't really go anywhere because he's wanted everywhere except for the Iron Islands, Ironborn. He has to go back to his home. Their home. So let's see, home. That's the title for the show. Of course, that's the theme of the show. So you figure home. You start off with, well, pretty much everybody is trying to go home. You know, Bran is trying to get home. The mountain, Tommen. Yeah, so basically this is the first one where Theon just wants to go home. And the next scene is Theon's home with Balin Greyjoy, who is the current king. He's talking to his daughter, and it's raining outside, lightning and raining. And Balin goes out onto a rope bridge to cross to get to the other side of the building. And on the other end of it is, I had to look this up, his name is Euron Greyjoy, Euron Greyjoy. And supposedly Euron is a nut job. I don't know if you listened carefully, but he kind of went nuts on his own ship, and his own men had to tie him up on his own ship so he didn't jump overboard. And after the storm calmed down, Euron killed every one of his men, okay? And I don't know if he's really dead. Did the Red Witch or her cult resurrect Euron Greyjoy also? So there's another story coming up. I think he's a brand new character. He's just arriving now. But, you know, Euron Greyjoy, the nut job, and he says, "I am the drowned god. What is dead may never die." Okay, great. I am the drowned god. So, of course, he comes in, nut job. Balin tries to stop him. Balin is old. Euron is younger, and Euron throws... I hope I'm saying it right. Euron throws Balin off the rope bridge, and, you know, Balin is dead. Hits the rocks or the water way down. So he's dead, and you have the funeral scene, and Balin's daughter now wants to be the ruler of the Iron Islands and the Ironborn, and she can't because she's a girl. So she's gonna have to fight for the title. That's what I inferred from the episode. I kind of, you know, rewound it and watched it again, and that's what I figured. So she's gonna have to fight for the title. But remember, the 5th of November, Theon is coming back home. So is Theon now officially the king of the Greyjoys, the Iron Islands, the Ironborn? And when does he get home? So does the brother and sister, do they have to fight each other? That will be interesting. Now, Theon, is he back to his old self as Theon? Or does he still have a little bit of Reek going on? A little bit of a, you know, still kind of brainwashed Reek. Man, there's a whole lot of brainwashing going on in Game of Thrones also. So that's going to be fun. All these things, it's like, again, little puzzle pieces that it's going to lead up to something. And it's going to, you know, probably the end of the season, you're going to have all these conclusions, or at the very least, confrontations. So that's going to be fun. And then, of course, the very last scene that everybody talks about and everybody spoiled it for you already, if you don't already know, is Melisandre does her witchy magic on Jon Snow's body. And she's depressed. She thinks she has no more powers. And that scene actually made me think, okay, she doesn't think she has any more powers. She doesn't think that she predicted the future properly because whatever she saw in the future never came true. So she's kind of hesitant about trying to resurrect Jon Snow. And, everybody kind of, she tries her ritual, washes his body so he's all clean. And then she does her, waving of hands over his body. And it looks like nothing's happening. Everybody leaves the room, and of course, the very, very last second of the scene is Jon Snow waking up. So I look carefully. He doesn't have the warg eyes, and he doesn't have the all black eyes, and he's not a he didn't turn into the winter zombie. So what happened now? What was that Melisandre's doing? Was it partly Melisandre's doing and something else was working magic on Jon Snow? Was he really dead? Was he warging? A whole bunch of different forces and elements are in play here. And so we're going to get to find that out in the next episode. So that is it for the episode 2 of Game of Thrones, season 6, titled Home. Now, where am I now? That's pretty good. I'm going 35 minutes into it. Actually got the, it's weird. I don't know if you've ever done this. It's like talking with your friends. You have this original idea going into, you know, when I press record on this podcast, I have these notes and I go, I'm going to talk about these bullet points. And then all of a sudden my mind goes off on a tangent. Oh, by the way, did you la, 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 la. Or I just think of it literally as I'm talking, something will dawn on me. And it's kind of a cool thing. I think that's why. If you've ever thought about trying to do a podcast, I'd say do it, because it's probably not going to be a lot of work on your part. Just do a simple one. Don't worry about the fancy equipment or the perfect microphone. Just take your phone and record yourself talking, and then things will uncover themselves when you're talking that you didn't even think you had it in you, which is kind of cool. Let me take a long sip of water while I go, you know, get prepared for Star Wars Day. Star Wars Day. Ah, cool, refreshing drink, Kahuna Burger. Pulp Fiction reference. Star Wars. Okay, I don't have any notes for this. I'm just going to talk about Star Wars. I talked about how I first came into Star Wars. When, let's say, my family and I immigrated to America, United States, from the Philippines in 1974. And I was 8 years old when we got here. So, 1974. Now, the first Star Wars, original Star Wars, came out in 1977. So, I was 11. And go figure, we've just been in the United States for 3 years, and we decide we're going to go visit the relatives, go back to the Philippines for the summer and visit the relatives. And I had no idea that this movie Star Wars was even out. Now, keep in mind, it's not like the internet. We had no internet back then. We barely had any TV channels. We had, what, channel 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13, and a channel 52 on UHF. So, and that's it. There was no cable TV. There was no satellite TV. There was no YouTube or Netflix. It was literally, what, how many channels is that? A handful of channels. And no cable box. So, you know, when you're a kid, you don't read the newspaper. You don't read the you know, LA Times calendar section to see what movies are coming out. So, of course, la, 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 la. School's out. I go with the family, and we go back to the Philippines, and we're just, when you're that age, I was 11, when you're 11 years old and you're with your family, unless you're going to a place like Disneyland, there is a whole lot of boring time going on. So, you know, you're stuck at your relative's house. The first 3 days are kind of fun. Everybody's going to, you know, seeing each other again after they haven't seen each other for years, like, you know, family reunion. And then if you got to spend another month, it's a whole bunch of boring days, right? So here I am kicking back. I'm listening to my cassette tapes. Yeah, that was the nice thing about going to a third world country is all the music is cheap because it's probably not licensed, at least back then. So, you know, back in America, you bought an album of songs, and it was like $7 or $8 back then. You go back to the third world country, And you can probably get 5 or 6 albums for that same price. So, of course, I had my cassettes, you know, I had like 4 cassettes. I was listening to Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Genesis. I can't remember. I can't believe I still remember these. So I'm listening, la, 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 writing down the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody. And all of a sudden, my cousin came in, and she was just out shopping with her mom. And she said, now, if you live in a third world country, especially in the tropics, you will find any excuse to go into a building with air conditioning, including movie theaters. And so my cousin came back home. We were staying with my cousins back then. And she says, we just saw this fantastic movie. It's called Star Wars. He's like, you guys got to see it. Everybody in the world has to see this movie. And I'm going, what? What is Star what? Wars what? What is it? Is it like... Now, keep in mind, back then, I had no idea what science fiction was yet. I was 11 years old, right? So what did we have? There was nothing. You know what? Okay, the popular thing back then was Roots, the miniseries, which also, that's a story in and of itself, because Roots started the TV miniseries, basically. You know, Roots and Shogun. So that, you know, that's an aside. But my cousin goes, yeah, this is a great movie. You got to see Star Wars. It's Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. I go, okay, fine. Yeah, sure, my cousin. You know, she's a girl. It's probably a romantic comedy, and it's got, you know, nothing I'm interested in. So, like, the next day, 2 days later, I'm out shopping with my mom. Of course, it's hot, it's humid. We need to get air conditioning. And so we walk into a movie theater. You know, it's a Star Wars. Holy crap. Just walking into a lobby, there was a full, I don't know if it was papier-mâché or was actually made like plastic, but it was their C-3PO on the left side, because this movie theater had 2 levels. It had a balcony that you walked up to, a balcony level, and a ground level. So, and there were curved staircases on one on either side. So on the left side was C-3PO, and on the right side, from what I remember, it was a stormtrooper. You know, the old 1977 Star Wars stormtrooper statues. So all of a sudden, of course, I'm going, okay, this, there's something really cool with this. So, of course, I still don't know what's going on. So we walk up to the balcony. I'm sitting there, don't know what to expect. And, you know, we sat down exactly at the perfect time when the movie started. Had no idea what was going on. So my earliest memory of Star Wars, the actual film, is seeing that absolutely humongous Star Destroyer coming in from the top right of the screen. First, you see this little blip of a ship, the Rebel blockade runner, the Tantive IV, coming in. And all of a sudden, the spear tip of the Star Destroyer comes in from the top right corner of the screen. And it kept coming, and it's going, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And how the freak long is this ship? And then when you think, oh, that's the end of the ship. No, it's the little docking bay on the underside of the ship, right? That little hole where the Rebel blockade runner is going to fit into later on. So I was like, no, there's more ship. There's more Star Destroyer. It's like, of course, we didn't know what Star Destroyers were. It's just a big freaking ship. And, you know, you finally see the 3 humongous engines. And then this is the big theater. In the Philippines, like, they don't chintz out on theaters, because they don't get to build like a theater every other block. They have this, you know, usually one big theater where everybody goes to. And so this huge theater with the rumbling of the Star Destroyer, and it's like, okay, that's it. It's like, you can have my money for the next, you know, 40 years of my life. and that was Star Wars for me. So of course, now keep in mind, I'm in the Philippines. All my buddies, my elementary school buddies are back in the States. So I got to wait another week, you know, few weeks before our vacation with the relatives finishes and we fly back to America. And of course, I fly back to America, and the first things out of my mouth and my friends' mouths are Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. And after that, it's basically, we talked about Star Wars because they saw Star Wars already. Some saw Star Wars multiple times. And it was also back then, even in America, there weren't that many movie theaters. So the best movie theater back then, now I live in the Los Angeles area, the best movie theater back then is, of course, the Grauman's Chinese Theater. Grauman's Chinese Theater, Man's Chinese Theater, whatever. I think it's called the TCL Theater now. So my friend Rod, his dad, took me and Rod to see Star Wars in Christmas of that year, and it was still playing at the Chinese Theater. And it was still awesome. Now, keep in mind, film degrades. This was in the day when, you know, film reels that had actual celluloid. But the sound was beautiful. It was super loud. And I remember seeing it was raining. And Rod saw Star Wars for the first time. I saw it for the second time. And from that point on, it was Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. And then the Topps trading cards came out. And I can still remember the smell of bubblegum. Back then, they actually still had bubblegum in trading card packs. And of course, you saved all your money, every cent that you can save from your allowance, and you bought boxes of these trading cards, and you trade them with your friends so you can collect the whole set. You know, you started off, I think the first series was a blue, and then the second series was red, third series was yellow, and fourth series was green. I'm a geek, folks. I've been a geek since May of 1977, so a Star Wars geek especially. And then you buy the Starlog magazines and the newspaper clippings and the People magazines with, you got the cheesy articles on Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill. Harrison Ford was nowhere to be seen, by the way. He's a very private person, so you barely saw him in any magazine interviews or like picture opportunities. It's always Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher. And who else? And back then, they didn't really promote David Prowse. No, I mean, not David Prowse. James Earl Jones as the voice of Darth Vader. So you basically had Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill as the ambassadors of Star Wars. And so, you know, the Star Wars Christmas special that we shall not speak of, that happened in Christmas of 1977. We got to see Boba Fett first time. Very different colored Boba. Still, if you watch it, though, it's not that bad. Just skip to the Boba Fett cartoon scene. It's kind of cool. And I'm going to keep this short. So basically, you know, 1980, The Empire Strikes Back comes along, and all of a sudden we're prepared. Me and my friends are prepared. So we're still getting rides from our moms, but we're prepared. So we have enough money to buy a ticket, a Coke, and maybe a gift item. And back then, there weren't many gift items like they are now in the theaters. Like freaking the popcorn bucket has Star Wars graphic on it. And pretty much you can go to the lobby and buy, you know, $50 worth of Star Wars stuff without even thinking about it. But back then, there was the Star Wars storybook. There were like little T-shirts you can buy. Not much. And they were kind of like bad quality, the T-shirts. So they weren't worth buying. They're flimsy. So, of course, I bought the Empire Strikes Back storybook. And back then, you know, weird. Okay, this is sort of a weird thing. Is back then, it was actually harder to watch. What do they call it? There's a name for it, where you just jump from one movie to another. You just stay in the whole theater chain. But back then, you know, when you're a kid, I was, 14? I had no money. I had, like, allowance. I got, you know, parents' money. And so we my friend and I saw The Empire Strikes Back, the second go-around. We saw it on the first weekend that it was out, and then we came back. And we stayed and watched, I think, three or four times. We basically got dropped off at noon. I think my mom or his mom dropped us off at noon. And we stayed there until like 7 at night. And after that, we were just like, kind of getting sick of Empire? So, of course, came back, watched it some more times. I think I watched Empire maybe 5 times total. 5 or 6 times in the theaters. Which is, The Empire Strikes Back is my favorite Star Wars movie. right up there with Star Wars A New Hope, the original one. So, yeah, it's hard for me. On certain days, I like the original Star Wars better. Certain days, I like Empire Strikes Back better. And then the Return of the Jedi. Actually, if you're wondering how would I rate the movies, I would rate The Empire Strikes Back as probably a 9.5. And Star Wars is a 9.25, okay, out of 10. And then The Force Awakens, probably a 9. And then Return of the Jedi, like an 8.5. And then I don't talk about the prequels. I'll tell you about the prequels. You want to know about the prequels? Okay, so let me skip. Okay, go to the Return of the Jedi. I'm just going to talk about the original trilogy and Force Awakens. And a little bit of the prequels. So, after Empire, we wait 3 more long years. No, actually, it wasn't that long. Because the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies were coming out. And the Blade Runner movie was came out. So, we kind of had our summer movies from 1980, 81, 82, and 83. So, we're kind of set. Okay, that's the cool part. So, the Raiders of the Lost Ark, that's another story. It's like my friends and I had no idea. Now, this was 19. Oh, I had my driver's permit, so we were driving now. So I was driving with my friends, and this was, I think, 1982 or 83. And we just stumbled upon Raiders of the Lost Ark. This would never happen anymore with the way theaters are right now and the way people know what is happening from the internet. But back then, when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, you basically showed up at the theater, you go had dinner, and then after the dinner, you kind of drove around to see what was playing at the local theaters. And we walked, and then we saw this long line outside of a theater. This was in Lakewood, California. Lakewood South was the theater. I don't go there anymore, but Lakewood South, it was like a brand new theater. They had really good quality stuff. And so they were playing this movie called Raiders of the Lost Ark. Now think about it. What in the hell is a Raiders of the Lost Ark? None of those words make sense. So we go in there and we wait in line. Oh, so that's pretty good. Pretty cool. And all of a sudden the big rolling ball comes in and then I was hooked. Raiders of the Lost Ark movie. You know, I throw you the whip, you throw me the idol. So, of course, that just made it even more anticipatory when Return of the Jedi came out in 1983 because we had a whole bunch of Harrison Fords going on. You know, you had Empire Strikes Back, Blade Runner in, I think it was 82 or 3, and Raiders of the Lost Ark in 81, and then Return of the Jedi in 83. So Return of the Jedi, that was fun. That was the first time I camped out to wait for a movie. I didn't see it on a Friday like a proper fan was supposed to do. I actually went to school on that Friday. But Saturday morning, I was there at 6 in the morning. And the first showing was at noon. So I waited. My dear mom went with us because she brought the lawn chairs. And, you know, we were able to sit. And basically, when you're a kid, We're sort of not kids anymore, but, you know, when we needed a big car, we had to borrow our parents' car sort of thing. And, like, if you want backup, like, if you want somebody to save your place, you know, you get one of your parents. Like, stand here while I go get tickets or stuff. So, of course, we waited in line. I waited with my mom. My friend waited with his mom. And we had our other friends who came along. And that was 1983, Return of the Jedi. Fantastic movie. My most memorable part of that movie to this day was during the Battle of Endor, you know, the Ewoks fighting the Stormtroopers. And the actually two scenes from that is when the Ewoks threw a rope that caught the speeder bike, and the speeder bike starts looping around the tree until it finally crashes into the tree. And when they rolled logs under the feet of the AT-ST in Return of the Jedi. It's like, forget about the blowing up the second Death Star. It's like it was that stuff. It was the Ewok battle, and you know, I still have a place in my heart for the Ewoks. I know they're goofy looking, but you know, when you the first time you see the movie, it's fantastic, and you also get a resolution to all these questions. It was kind of hinky in terms of Leia being Luke's sister. I actually, because Luke is my hero. It's like I can acknowledge Han Solo is the biggest badass in the Star Wars universe, and you know he's. I would say Han Solo is my favorite character, but Luke is the character I root for. Okay, so I always wanted Luke to get Leia, but at the same time. George Lucas kind of wrapped it up kind of tidy with making Leia his sister, and now Luke can just concentrate on being a Jedi, which is like sort of a monk. It's like, it's kind of boring, but then again, if you're going to be badass and, you know, dress in black and force choke everybody and, you know, fight without fighting, that was a cool part, right? So maybe, I guess, the end, you know, I am a father, I am a Jedi like my father before me. That got me. So the whoa scenes with the Ewoks in the, on Endor, and then the I am a Jedi like my father before me, that got me kind of choked up, which is, you know. So that's Return of the Jedi. What else? The prequels. True story. You won't believe me, but I'm going to tell you it's a true story. When The Phantom Menace came out, I waited again in line. I didn't wait that long. I waited maybe 2 hours in line. And finally got to see the movie, and I was so looking forward to the movie that I didn't realize that my legs were all tense. Like, you know when you wedge your foot under a chair and like you make it stay there for like an hour without moving, your muscles get cramps that you will suffer the next morning. And so that's what happened to me. I was anticipating The Phantom Menace so much, this after years of no Star Wars, we finally have this movie called The Phantom Menace. And the first time I saw it, I remember, I think it was pretty good. The lightsaber scene was awesome, the Darth Maul, that was pretty awesome. And then I keep thinking, was that supposed to be what Star Wars was about? Like, am I misremembering the original trilogy? Was the original trilogy like this? And so, you know, I watched it a couple of more times, and then it's like, yeah, no, this is not, I don't like this movie. And so, of course, when the Attack of the Clones came out, I was a bit more hesitant. I saw it anyway. I saw it 1.5 times. I saw it once, and then I tried to see it again, walked out halfway, and I think I watched, like, Good Will Hunting or something. I think I saw Good Will Hunting, which is like, that's not a bad trade-off. If you're gonna walk out of one and then you wind up seeing Good Will Hunting, so that's good. And then Revenge of the Sith, I watched it by myself. I didn't want to take a chance of being depressed or let down, so I just went to the day show. I didn't watch it on the first showing, and it was pretty good. It was, you know, it was better than the episode 1 and 2. So, and then years later, and of course I have the, you know, collectibles, the Kenner action figures, vintage stuff, still mint in box. Here's a tip, boys and girls, and I don't know if you can really do this anymore. Back in the day, back in like 1984, 1985, when Kenner was just about to discontinue the Star Wars line of action figures, we were at that age where our friends were getting jobs, you know, entry level jobs, minimum wage, where a lot of times they were stocking shelves in supermarkets or department stores, right? And those were the days where some major department stores were closing. If you're old enough to remember, there's Montgomery Ward, there's a Zodi's, there's Two Guys, there's Fedco and Gemco. This is in the Southern California area. And whenever stores like that close, you want to, especially if you have somebody on the inside, you know, working at the store, and they tell you, you know, we're going to close, but for some reason, they're still bringing in shipments this last week. You know, so my friend told me, he said, come on over at this time, and you'll have the first pick, your choice of these brand new boxes of action figures. So of course we went crazy. We were at that age where we had jobs already. We had some kind of money. I think we each brought probably 50 or 60 bucks. I did. My friend went crazy and brought like 100 bucks more than that, which is like all the money in the world back then. So we kind of cleaned up on the action figures, and we knew better. We were at that age where we're kind of starting to get into college, and we didn't really play with the action figures anymore. So we actually just put them in a closet, just, you know, put them in a box, out of sunlight, you know, indoors, and I still have them. Yay! So, and let me see that. And then, yeah, jump to the prequels, whole bunch of prequels. And then now we are here with The Force Awakens. And everybody knows what happened with Force Awakens because it is now. And it's, you know what's kind of nice is May, we celebrate Star Wars in May, but we get the movie in Christmas. So it's almost like every 6 months we get to celebrate Star Wars. Oh, yeah, sure, every 6 months, every freaking day. Or every week we have May 4th, which is Star Wars Day. We also have May 25th, which is Geek Day, and which is the actual day anniversary of the original Star Wars, May 25th, 1977. So in the month of May, we can, if you want, to celebrate Star Wars twice, May 4, May 25. And then we get some kind of Force Friday happening in September, right, getting ready for Christmas. And then we'll get the trailers, and then we'll get the comic conventions. And during the comic conventions, there's going to be more teaser trailers for Star Wars. So basically, so you have the Star Wars movie coming out right around Christmas, and then you kind of ride that high up until about February, and you hope another Deadpool movie comes out to tide you over until about March. And March is sort of when the conventions start happening, and then you get your refill of Star Wars again. Your juju, and not just Star Wars, but science fiction, comic books, geek stuff, superheroes. So it's, you know, I wouldn't have anything to podcast about if there wasn't so many things going on a weekly basis. So, you know, God bless America. God bless geekery. So I sort of wanted to talk about those parts of Star Wars that affected my life. If you want to hear a sort of a different, not a different, but it's the same story, but the parts of the story that I didn't say on this podcast, I talked about back then. So check out my older podcast back in, right on the week of when The Force Awakens comes out. So it's like December 17. Check out my podcast around those 2 weeks. And I talk about Star Wars and how I came to love Star Wars. So there you go. I'm going to go. I got a whole bunch of other stuff to do. But happy Star Wars Day. And until next time, I'll talk to you soon. Civil War comes out this weekend. So haha. More stuff to talk about. And of course, Game of Thrones comes out again this Sunday, episode 3. So, yeah, maybe we'll get a new Rogue trailer, longer video. So let's see what happens. Until next time, this is Gerardo San Diego. You can find me on thedailynight.net, thedailynight.net. And, yeah, if you have any questions, all my contact information is on my website. And you can also listen to this podcast using go on iTunes, look for The Daily Knight with a K, or my name Gerardo San Diego, and also any podcast aggregators like Podcast, I think it's called Podcast Republic, or any of these other podcast apps. and you can find me there. All right? So until next time, I'll talk to you soon. May the Force be with you. Thank you very much.